This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. Together, we will discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to people with cancer, and advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help and hope. We'd like to give you help by sharing some of the latest information, but we also really want to give you hope as well. And if you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, you can email us at healthline@yale.edu, or I'd ask you to write down this number, phone number 1-888-234-4YCC, and we'll try to answer your question on the air today or in a future broadcast. If you're interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are posted in audio and written format on the Yale Cancer Center website at www.yalecancercenter.org, all one word, yalecancercenter.org.
Today, our program focuses on advances in the treatment of lymphoma, and it really is our great pleasure to have with us as our special guest, Dr. Francine Foss, who is a professor of medical oncology and director of the Lymphoma, Leukemia, and Myeloma Clinical Research Program here at the Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Foss is a leading expert in the treatment of lymphoma, and her career is focused on developing novel therapies for this disease. Francine, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Thank you very much, Ed and Ken. It's a pleasure to be here to discuss the non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, which are diseases that are increasing in frequency in our population.
So, Francine, along those lines, what is lymphoma, and in fact, how many people are diagnosed with this disease?
Well, lymphoma is a general term for a group of cancers that involve the lymph system. These cancers generally involve the white blood cells or the lymphocytes. There are two different types, the T cells and the B cells. There's also a third type of lymphoma called Hodgkin's disease that involves a different type of cell. These cancers occur in about 63,000 Americans per year, and that number is increasing over the last 9 or 10 years.
So just to follow up on that, Francine, what accounts for the increased numbers of lymphomas that are being diagnosed?
I think there are several factors that account for the increasing numbers, one of which is environmental toxins and carcinogens that we find in our water supply, in our food, and from various chemicals around us. For instance, it's known that dioxin, or the active chemical in Agent Orange, is associated with non-Hodgkin's lymphomas in military personnel that were exposed to this during Vietnam. It's also known that farmers in the Midwest exposed to lots of pesticides have an increased incidence of lymphoma. Another factor is the prevalence of various viral infections in our population. There are certain viruses, such as HTLV-1, that's common in the Caribbean and Japan, that is associated with T-cell lymphoma. And also, patients who develop HIV have an increased incidence of developing lymphoma. There are other factors as well, such as genetic factors that are less poorly understood.
Now, is there, going back to the exposure to Agent Orange, and to, for that matter, for pesticides and things like that, how long is the lag period between exposure and when people are developing lymphoma?
That's not really clear, but it could potentially be very long, in that many of the Vietnam vets didn't develop lymphoma for 5 to 15 years after they were exposed.
What's also interesting is that, as you mentioned before, Hodgkin's lymphoma is another type of lymphoma. And as we're finding, as we're getting better in terms of curing Hodgkin's disease, what is happening is many years later, non-Hodgkin's is developing.
That's right. Hodgkin's disease is an interesting type of lymphoma that oftentimes occurs in younger people. Usually it presents with a mass, or in many cases, patients are asymptomatic. This disease was thought to be associated with another virus called EBV, although it's unclear whether that association is direct, because EBV is basically the virus that causes mononucleosis, and we're all exposed to this at some point in our life. We've made tremendous strides in terms of curing Hodgkin's disease, and now about 70% of patients are cured with combination of radiation and chemotherapy. Some of what we've learned about curing Hodgkin's disease has been applied to the other more aggressive lymphomas, as you've alluded to, Dr. Chu.
A question, is lymphoma an inherited disease? I mean, that's a question I've heard patients ask fairly frequently.
Well, there are certain genes that are mutated in families, such as the P53 gene and other genes that can cause a number of different types of cancers, lymphoma being one of those. But generally, most of the patients we see with lymphoma have what we call sporadic cases. In other words, at some point in time, a mutation develops in the genes of that patient, and that leads them to develop lymphoma.
So as far as we know, there are really no genetic tests that we currently have available to help diagnose lymphoma?
Well, genetic tests are a whole different story. There actually are some specific tests that have been developed to identify certain types of lymphoma based on genes that are overexpressed or genes that are mutated. So now if we look at the B-cell lymphomas, we have certain genes like BCL2 and other chromosomal translocations that we can identify that help us to characterize these diseases more specifically. And in some cases, learning something about the genetics of the tumor helps us to treat patients better in terms of knowing whether they would respond better to one type of therapy versus another.
Now, what would be early signs of this disease? Because, I think we were just saying that we can't really predict who's going to develop it. We have some idea who's at risk. But if a person were to complain of what symptoms in particular, would you be concerned that they may have lymphoma? And what would be reasons to go see the doctor?
Well, the most common way that lymphoma is diagnosed is usually either in an emergency room or a primary care setting. When a patient comes in complaining of a lump that's been there for weeks to months and hasn't disappeared. Another common complaint is patients have fatigue. They may potentially develop night sweats. Their overall health may decline. They just may not have as much energy as they did before. And in some cases, it's diagnosed because a routine blood test is obtained, and that blood test is abnormal.
So if there's any suspicion for an individual having lymphoma, what are the next steps in order to make a definitive diagnosis?
Well, I think it's important for the primary care physician to recognize the early signs of lymphoma and to pursue an evaluation for the patient, which includes not only routine blood work such as a blood count, but also getting CAT scans or PET scans or some way of imaging the lymph nodes inside the body as well as the liver and the spleen and the other organs.
And what are your thoughts about this notion that if a lymph node is tender or not tender, that might help to distinguish between cancer versus a more benign condition?
Well, that's really a very poor predictor. In many instances, people can develop tender lymph nodes just because they have a sore throat or they may have cut themselves and the lymph node may be swollen because the body is reacting to the infection. So in many cases with a single swollen node, if there's a precipitating factor such as a sore throat or some other infection, the likelihood of lymphoma is very low. However, there are certain patients, and particularly patients with Hodgkin's disease, who can develop with swollen nodes. So having a swollen tender node by itself shouldn't tell you definitively that patient does not have lymphoma and should be checked into.
How would a doctor make the diagnosis? I mean, what kind of tests would a patient expect to have, and what would happen then?
Well, like any other kind of cancer, the definitive diagnosis is made based on looking at a piece of tissue under the microscope. So getting a biopsy of the lymph node, which can be done in some cases using a needle aspirate or a needle core biopsy. But in most instances, this requires actually taking out a lymph node and looking at it under the microscope.
Francine, I want to ask you one other thing, and then we're going to take a break. But a lot of times people are afraid of finding out that they have a cancer. For someone who has lymphoma in general, what is the prognosis? And should they be afraid of finding it out and being treated?
Well, I think the news with respect to lymphoma is very good, and it's only getting better over time. This is a disease that we can cure in the majority of patients, and I think that's an important message for both patients and other physicians who are not oncologists. We've made tremendous strides with respect to curing not only Hodgkin's disease, but the more aggressive B-cell lymphomas. And I think we'll talk a little bit more about that in the second part of the show. I think that the overall message is very encouraging for lymphoma, and every day new drugs are developed, I think, that will help us to cure more patients in the future.
Which is terrific. We'd like to remind our listening audience you can email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and please stay tuned to learn more information about the treatment of lymphoma with Dr. Francine Foss from the Yale Cancer Center.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2006, over 11,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in Connecticut alone. Early detection is key. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for the disease. Patients with colorectal cancer have more hope than ever before. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving colorectal cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTAC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Hsu, and our guest, Dr. Francine Foss, who's the director of the Lymphoma, Leukemia, and Myeloma Program at the Yale Cancer Center. Welcome back to Francine and to our listening audience.
So, Francine, we were just talking about, you know, overall prognosis for patients diagnosed with lymphoma, and you were talking about how we've made such great strides just within the last few years. Maybe you could just review very briefly, you know, what is the treatment strategy that one needs to take once a patient is given a diagnosis of lymphoma?
Well, I think the first step is to decide what type of lymphoma you're dealing with. I mentioned Hodgkin's disease, but then there are several other subtypes. Most of the lymphomas that we see are B-cell lymphomas. About 85% fall into the category of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma or low-grade B-cell lymphoma. The other major category is T-cell lymphoma. Now, most of what I'm telling you about treatment and prognosis is associated with the B-cell lymphoma and Hodgkin's disease group. The T-cell lymphomas generally are much tougher to treat and really have an entirely different strategy.
Francine, you're one of the world's leading experts in lymphoma in general, but as it turns out, also specifically for the T-cell lymphomas. And as it turns out, the Yale Cancer Center also is one of the leading institutions for this particular kind of lymphoma. Perhaps you could explain a little bit more.
Well, there are two different types of T-cell lymphomas. One type called cutaneous T-cell lymphoma that presents predominantly in the skin with various kinds of skin tumors and skin rashes. Also, patients can develop lymph nodes and leukemic involvement of their blood. Those diseases can be treated with a number of different topical and systemic therapies and generally low-grade types of treatments, and most patients live for a very long time. There's another type called the aggressive T-cell lymphomas that can involve other organs in the body, and these tend to be diseases that are very, very difficult to treat. At Yale, we've assembled a group of investigators, scientists, and other clinical personnel who are expert in treating these aggressive T-cell lymphomas. And as Ed mentioned, there are very few centers in the United States where those patients are referred to, where there's a number of specialists with expertise in not only treating them, but also diagnosing these diseases, which can be very difficult.
Francine, I want to ask you about you talked about B-cell lymphomas being probably the most common. So I want to focus on that for a couple minutes. How are chemotherapy and radiation therapy used in the treatment of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma?
Well, generally speaking, the first step for most patients is to receive chemotherapy. And depending on what type of lymphoma they have, it may be a single agent such as a monoclonal antibody, rituximab being the most common one, or it may be multi-agent chemotherapy involving three or four drugs. In some instances, patients also receive radiation therapy predominantly to the larger nodes that are involved. In some patients with very early stage B-cell lymphoma, their treatment may be radiation therapy alone with very short course chemotherapy to supplement the effects of the radiation.
Francine, for our listening audience, you just mentioned monoclonal antibodies and one in particular, rituximab. Again, perhaps you could just describe in a little bit more detail, what are monoclonal antibodies, what do they target, and what is this drug, rituximab?
A monoclonal antibody is a protein, which is basically an antibody Our body makes antibodies directed against various toxins in our body. The rituximab is a monoclonal antibody that was designed to specifically bind to a protein called CD20 that's on the surface of B-cell cancer cells. That antibody binds to that protein and therefore allows the body's immune system to recognize those tumor cells and kill them off, whereas beforehand, the tumor cells express the CD20 protein, but for some reason, our bodies don't recognize those as being tumor cells, and therefore they don't get eradicated from our system.
And are these antibodies specific for the tumor cells, or do they also attack normal cells?
Well, unfortunately, the antibodies aren't specific. We would, in the ideal world, like to design an antibody that targets a protein that's only on a tumor cell and not on the normal cells. The CD20 protein is expressed on normal B cells, and so during the course of therapy with rituximab, there is a slight decrease in the number of normal B cells. However, these come back very quickly. It may in fact be that the tumor cells express a higher amount of the CD20 protein, which makes the antibody more selectively target those rather than the normal populations.
Francine, email I want to share with you. This is from Connie, who's from Marlboro. And she said, my mother has been treated for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and her doctor talked about using an antibody that is radioactive. Connie's asking, what does that mean?
Well, we've gone the next step with monoclonal antibodies. We've had a number of clinical trials showing that they work as naked antibodies, so to speak, as the antibody itself without any other toxic chemical or linkage to any other molecule. The next step was to hook up those antibodies both to various kinds of toxins and also to radioactive elements such as iodine and yttrium. These are called conjugated radionuclides, and what they do is they take the radioactivity specifically to the site of the tumor cell because the antibody is going to want to home into the tumor cell. And they deliver high doses of radiation specifically to the tumor cells. This can be very effective, particularly in patients who have already had chemotherapy and patients who didn't respond to the naked antibody alone.
Good. We'd like to remind you to email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor's story. And please stay tuned to learn more information about lymphoma with Dr. Francine Foss from the Yale Cancer Center.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's a story of a hero from Hamden.
10 years ago, when I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia, there was no cure. After teaching math for 35 years, I was forced to retire. Dr. Tom Duffy at the Yale Cancer Center told me about a new procedure called a mini stem cell transplant. He encouraged me to put my life in the hands of Dr. Stuart Seropian, one of the few doctors in the country doing this procedure. On January 17, 2004, I had a stem cell transplant at the Yale Cancer Center. At age 70, I feel like a new man. I owe a great debt of gratitude to my anonymous stem cell donor and to the terrific staff at the Yale Cancer Center. They literally saved my life.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. Francine Foss from the Yale Cancer Center. We're discussing this exciting breakthroughs that have been made in the treatment of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Francine, you've really been one of the leading experts in developing new therapies for lymphoma. Perhaps you could review with the listening audience what are some of the really interesting clinical trials that you're directly involved with here at the Yale Cancer Center.
Well, one of the interesting agents that we developed was a drug called Denileukin Diftitox, which is kind of a takeoff on the monoclonal antibody story. Whereas a monoclonal antibody is a protein that targets a protein on the cell, the Denileukin Diftitox is actually a ligand. It's actually a molecule such as interleukin-2 or a growth factor that fits into a receptor on the cell. The molecule is hooked up to a toxin. In the case of Denileukin Diftitox, it's diphtheria toxin, and it delivers that toxin through that receptor directly into the tumor cell. So it's much more specific in some cases than some of the monoclonal antibodies, and it's also much more effective because it kills the cell right away. So we developed the Denileukin Diftitox for patients with cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, We've now found that it works in patients with B-cell lymphoma, with B-cell CLL, and more importantly, in patients with the more aggressive T-cell lymphomas. We've also found that this molecule works by affecting the immune system and the response of the immune system to the tumor, which I think is a very important direction that we're going in now, not only in lymphoma therapy, but also in the treatment of other solid tumors.
Now, I have to say, that's a very, very interesting point. The last thing you mentioned, that these therapies may also affect the immune system. Can you say a little bit more about that? Because that's unusual.
Well, this is one of the areas that we'd really like to focus on at Yale in our laboratory environment, which is the whole issue of how the tumor cell interacts with antigen-presenting cells as well as other lymphocytes such as T cells that are the body's defense and attack these tumor cells. One of the problems in cancer is that the tumor cells can't be recognized by the immune system because some of these immune effector cells are paralyzed by the tumor and by the different environmental influences of the tumor. It may be that some of the drugs that we treat cancer patients with actually thwart the attempts of the immune system to fight the tumor cell. The only way to know for sure is to actually study the effects of those drugs on the normal immune system. So this work is being done predominantly now in the context of lymphomas, and we're specifically looking at ways to upregulate or stimulate the immune system. One of the ways we do this is by taking antigen-presenting cells from patients through a process called photopheresis, and then incubating those overnight with tumor cells in a process called transimmunization, and then giving that mixture back to the patients. In the case of patients with T-cell lymphoma, this is very effective at educating the body to recognize the tumor cells and develop an immune response.
It's important maybe for our listeners to understand and appreciate that this whole concept was developed here really at the Yale Cancer Center by our director, Dr. Richard Edelson, and his colleagues, and that Dr. Foss actually expanded and developed this approach as part of stem cell transplantation and is continuing that work here at the Yale Cancer Center.
I think that this is an important point that you bring up, Dr. Chu, because Dr. Edelson was the first one to show that this photopheresis procedure could stimulate an anti-tumor response in a patient with T-cell lymphoma. We're now looking at this approach in patients with lung cancer, and soon we're hoping to open up a study with ovarian cancer, as well as a study with patients who've developed acute myelogenous leukemia. In addition, we're exploring a number of small molecules or other drugs which have been developed at Yale and which may potentially enhance the effect of this whole process to stimulate the immune system. Some of these drugs also have activity by themselves against the tumor.
Francine, I want to read you another email that we received, which really refers to a different type of treatment that I'd like you to talk about. This is from Bethany, who's from New Haven, and she says, I've heard a lot about stem cell transplants in the media. Can you explain what that is and what kind of cancers are they used for?
A stem cell transplant can be one of two things. It can be taking stem cells or bone marrow cells from the patient, freezing them away, and then using them later on after a patient receives high-dose chemotherapy. That's called autologous transplant. Or it can be obtaining those same stem cells from another patient, either a related donor or potentially an unrelated person. That's called an allogeneic transplant. The autologous transplant, which involves taking stem cells from yourself, is a procedure that's used very commonly in patients with B-cell lymphoma. And in fact, this strategy can cure patients with aggressive B-cell lymphomas who haven't responded to chemotherapy. We now have better ways of supporting patients through this process, and we also have more effective chemotherapies. So the option of stem cell transplant is significantly increased in patients with B-cell lymphoma. With T-cell lymphoma, unfortunately, patients do not respond to the autologous transplant. So we at Yale have developed some novel strategies to use allogeneic transplantation in a way that's safe and effective, so even elderly patients with these aggressive T-cell lymphomas can have this as a potential therapeutic option.
Francine, one of the big problems with allogeneic stem cell transplantation is graft versus host disease, and you've really been a pioneer in trying to develop strategies to prevent the incidence of graft versus host disease, but at the same time to maintain the ability of that transplant to kill off the tumor cells, and you're continuing that work here at Yale. Can you comment a little bit more on that?
Yes, we developed a strategy using the extracorporeal photopheresis procedure to obtain dendritic cells or antigen-presenting cells from the patient who's undergoing the transplant. We educate those cells so that they don't react to the donor bone marrow when it's infused. The whole process of graft versus host disease occurs because somebody else's cells are being infused into your body, and those cells attack your body. So by using this procedure prior to the transplant, we've been able to very effectively reduce the acute graft versus host disease. At the same time, those donor cells are very effective at fighting against the tumor, so most of the patients who undergo this procedure go into remission from their underlying lymphoma. Now we're taking this one step further, and we're looking at perhaps educating those dendritic cells to the tumor cells prior to the transplant. So looking at the interaction between the dendritic cells and the tumor cells, and then the interaction between the educated dendritic cells and the new donor's T cells. So we're hoping to refine this technique so that we can expand even further to patients who are older and sicker so that they can undergo this procedure.
And I think one of the special features about the work that you're doing is that it really requires very careful integration coordination with clinical investigators, clinical support staff, and basic scientists who have special expertise in immunology, immunobiology.
That's exactly right. In order to do this kind of cutting-edge research, it really involves integration of a number of different facilities and personnel. And one of the major strengths of Yale is that we do have a tremendous immunobiology department. We have tremendous resources within all of the academic departments, as well as in the clinical trials office, to facilitate bringing all this together, which really involves getting multiple samples of cells from patients at different points in time, transporting them to labs, processing them, and somehow getting them back into the patient. This is something that does require a tremendous amount of effort, and I think this is one of the real strengths of our program.
So I want to go back and ask you again about the idea of educating, in a sense, the donor cells so that they can do a better job in fighting the lymphoma. Is that what the research question is?
That's right. I think there are two questions, one of which is to decrease the graft versus host disease. But the other question is that we would like to develop more effective ways of educating those cells that we're infusing into the patient, which are going to be that patient's new immune system, to really recognize and kill off the leukemia or lymphoma cells sooner rather than later. What happens with allogeneic transplant is that patients get their donor cells infused and they do well for the first 2 or 3 months. But then their disease starts to grow back, their lymphoma or leukemia starts to grow back. If we don't have a very good graft versus leukemia effect, in other words, if we don't have donor cells that are really revved up to fight against those lymphoma cells, then the transplant may not be a success.
Well, if you have questions for Dr. Francine Foss or for Healthline, I encourage you to visit our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. Before we sign off, Francine, can you review with us the 2 or 3 key messages that you'd like our listeners to remember about the new advances in the treatment of lymphoma?
I think that the first message I'd like to convey is that one of the key aspects nowadays is to have the correct diagnosis. We've learned a lot about lymphomas. We've subgrouped them based on molecular biology into many different categories. And in order to direct therapy most appropriately, we need to know what disease we're dealing with. I think the second message is that we've made tremendous strides in terms of therapy. Patients should pursue the most aggressive therapy possible because in many instances they have a good chance of being cured. And the third thing I would stress is for patients not to be afraid of some of the new drugs and new therapies. There are some investigational therapies that have not been FDA approved yet that have tremendous potential. And I think these are going to find their way into the clinic soon. So I would encourage patients to go online to use a number of different resources available to them to seek multiple opinions and to get the best possible therapy for their disease.
If someone wants to access a clinical trial at the Yale Cancer Center, what would they do?
Well, they can go directly online to the Yale Cancer Center website, and they can get information on all the clinical trials that are available at Yale. And I believe there are also links to other websites where they contain other information about diseases from that website.
I'd like to thank Dr. Francine Foss for joining us on Healthline.
Francine, this was a terrific session. Thank you again. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will focus on drug development at the Yale Cancer Center, and our special guest will be Dr. Mario Snoll, Associate Professor of Medical Oncology and Vice Chief of Medical Oncology. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.